pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes from the November meeting or the teleconference of November 29th? Hearing none, those stand as printed. Joe, you represent the entire visiting population.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Item A. Financial report.
You should have the financial reports, although you should have some new ones that were printed out in front of you.
We received those this morning?
Yes. Okay. And there's been some slight modifications. I'm not going to go through the November ones, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time with December, just to say that you can all read and look at the numbers. If you have any questions, obviously I will try to answer them. The difference, if you look on page 2, which is the income and expense statement, we have a difference, meaning we had income in excess of expense of $168,283.
Excuse me, Lee, you were talking about what on page 2 you're talking about for December?
Yes, I'm in December.
Gotcha.
I'm going to skip over November.
That's
and just,
fine.
There's nothing significantly different.
Gotcha.
So the actuals are that we had income in excess of expense, and I avoid using the word profit since we are a nonprofit organization, but of $168,283, which, when you compare it to our budget, we were actually almost $540,000 to the good of what we expected to be, of what we had budgeted a year ago. So that is a positive outcome. There aren't too many things on there that are very exciting. If you move on to the accounts receivable report, and we'll be doing a much more detailed look at this, but there are 234 accounts in the system, and Lee has kindly given us a little bit of a reconciliation down there at the bottom. 229 of those are memberships or shareholders. We have three new that were added, which are the new mini lots, or I'm not sure what we're calling them, but the mini lots. Three of them are the country club, and two of them are the HOA. So we can reconcile back to the number of shareholders, and that's why I was asking Lee: how do we have more accounts receivable than we have shareholders? And she was kind enough to explain to me what that is.
It's not 234; it's 2,034.
2,000. Sorry. It's a little early.
Yeah.
It's a little early.
I was looking for that.
Sorry. 2,034. You are correct. And the total balance owed to us is $96,833. And as I said, you probably all looked at the display that we'll be talking about in terms of more detailed information about those accounts receivables. And the statement of cash flows, our net income for the month of December was minus $173,142. All that means is that we spent $173,000 more in cash than we took in, but that is not unexpected since most of our income comes from shareholder fees at the beginning of the year and is not spread out evenly throughout the year, so that's not an unanticipated number. And our cash at the end of the year, December, was $772,655. The next page is the detail of the income and expense, and it is just that, it's the detail supporting the previously discussed summary. And if anybody has any questions about those, any of those specific accounts, I'm sure that Lee or others can answer those. But I don't see any reason necessarily to go through them in any detail. And then the final page is the list of...
Hey, Lee, this is Andy.
Yes, Andy.
Question. And that's, why is there a $22,000 credit for vacation, holiday, and sick pay?
That's vacation accrued that is payable if someone leaves. It just so happened that the majority of that was Dave's. And he has been using a lot of vacation time due to his current situation. So the vacation accrual came down $21,000. It's now at $3,000.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And then the final page is a list of payments made during the December pay period. So if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to try and respond to those more accurately. I will defer to Lee, number one, to answer any questions.
Questions or comments from the board? Thank you. Anything else on financial?
Hey, Lee, on that... December bills paid page.
Yes.
There's a total December of $57,000 and change, but then two lines down, there's a total December the 8th for $122,800, for a total of $180,000. So can you help me understand what those three numbers are?
Those would be the total, you mean the USDA numbers?
Yeah, so there's two December totals.
Oh, the...
And then there's a grand total for December, and I'm just trying to understand those three numbers.
I'm going to make a statement, and then I'll let Lee correct me when I misstate. The $57,385.07 is the total number of payments made from our operating budget in December. The $122,859.92 is the total amount of payments made related to the USDA loan project. And the $182,44.99 is the sum of those two.
Okay, so the USDA numbers, the $122,859, will that be reimbursable from the loan?
Unknown yet, but we're going to keep track of it like it is, or will we?
Okay.
I think the answer is we're anticipating that, but one never knows until we get the check from the USDA and it clears the bank. So.
Was there anything in the scope of that work that was outside of the purview of the loan?
MC Engineering, no. I don't know what happens with legal fees.
Okay.
Yeah, for the legal costs, we need to make sure that we segregate if any of Michael's efforts are related to the USDA loan, which are just related to non-operational type stuff.
I did say Michael's total bill was $5,000, so, and I break it up by what part is USDA and record that separately and then record operating separately as well.
Okay, because yeah, legal was quoted within the MC Engineering project total.
And let me know if we need to document differently, the way we used to do, or when we had so many different matters. So if we need to start doing that again, we can do it, but okay. If it's easy enough, then
I think you list pretty, you're very detailed, right. So I think we're okay. So I will let you
just know. Just let me know.
You got it.
Okay, Andy, you clear on the numbers?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay. Lee, thank you. Okay. Where is your stuff? Anything else on the November, December financials?
No.
Okay. Any questions of the board? Motion approved.
So moved.
Second.
Can we do that? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Aged accounts receivable.
This is a, you should have in front of you a page that is highlighted in yellow across the top. There's two charts, one for November, one for December. Again, I'm going to skip November and go to December because there's very little difference between the two. What this shows is that we have a large number, well, we have a small number of people who owe us most of the money that we are owed. And we have a large number of people who don't owe us very much. And if we looked, we've identified these by number to preserve their anonymity, shall we say. But if we look at number one, as of 2006, number one owed us $2,141. And if you read across there, then each year, number one has failed to pay us any of the fees that we have charged that person. So the total amount of shareholder fees that number one owes us is $6,228. There are additional account charges. There is interest, which is $13,020, and yes, that's more than twice what the shareholder fees are. We charge interest at 1.5% per month, which is a
This is the bracket.
Credit card level interest.
Is it in the bracket?
Yeah, it's in the bracket.
Oh, okay.
You gotta pay for it.
There are penalty fees, there are lien fees.
Almost different.
And what we wind up with then is that number one owes us almost $20,000. And this is a concern to me because Lee has not convinced me, Lee has educated me that when someone owes us money, that is a lien, and again, you correct me when I misspeak here, Lee, that is a lien against their property, and that when they go to sell that property, we are standing in line between the buyer and the seller, and we get paid. And so that this is a, we are as close to being guaranteed that our accounts receivable will be eventually paid to us as we possibly can. I want to spend a little bit more time looking at this and come to the board with a proposed policy or procedure for dealing with some of these people. Because if you think about it, if number one's lot, for instance, was only worth $20,000, number one is never going to sell that lot, because number one would sell the lot for $20,000, the $20,000 would come to us, and number one gets no money. And let's suppose that it's now 5 years down the road and number one owes us $30,000 and sells the lot for $20,000, as Lee points out, the $10,000, and again, correct me here, the $10,000 of difference is then passed on to the new buyer of the lot. And they owe us that money. Well, who in their right mind is going to pay $20,000 for a lot that's worth $20,000 and also get hit with an accounts receivable of 10 grand, in effect paying $30,000 for a lot that has a market value of 20? So at some point here, and I don't know where that is, but at some point, number one is, we're not going to get the money back from number one, because they're never going to sell that lot, because it's going to cost them money. So anyway, what I'm suggesting is I will come up with some suggestions as to how we deal with people like number one. And in fact, look at all of the these long-term accounts receivable and see if we can't find some way to encourage them to pay us and become current, which is what we would like to do. And obviously all of these people, well, I think all of these people are vacant lots. They are not, they don't have structures, so otherwise we would have turned the water off on them. Which were, again, that... Sorry.
Lee, let me interrupt for a second and ask Lee number one, what's the deal with these, you know, probably top three or four folks? Why aren't they paying their fees?
I will say for the most part they are lots. I have three homes that are currently leaned and locked. They're not at anywhere near the amount owed of the top five, six, seven. They're lots that were purchased and they don't feel like, because they're not getting water from the company, they don't feel they should owe the shareholders' fee, their portion of expenses. These are monies that are pertinent to the property, so they don't go with the owner, the current owner. They stay with the land.
And just to, so the, we can come up with a policy on ways to encourage people to pay if we want, but the next legal step in the process would be, we don't have to wait for, I mean, normally the way we do it is, and this has happened in the past, I mean, it just happened last year where the scenario you just described actually came up, where our lien on a property was potentially holding up the sale of the property because the value of the cost of the lien was basically eating into any, equity that the owner had, the seller had, all came to us essentially. And they requested a modification of the amount owed, and we said no, and we got our money. And I think that's the way it, in most cases, that's the way it's going to play out. But if it reaches a point where the bill to us becomes disproportionate to the value of the property, we can just foreclose on the lien. We don't have to wait for a sale.
Yeah, but then we own the lot, right?
Correct. We can do that. We can.
We either own the lot or it forces them to sell and we get our money that way.
Okay. There are some other actions. For example, a collection agency is one of the things I'm thinking about that we should look at as a way of possibly encouraging them to pay us. There are some other things that we might think about doing, and I'm going to bring some suggestions to the board for alternatives to think about, and Michael and others can, you know, comment about the appropriateness or the,
yep,
you know, that sort of thing. But I found this a very enlightening presentation with regard to our accounts receivable, and I think the really good news is we have a few people who are consistently not paying us, but the vast majority of our shareholders are paying us and are current. And so we do not really have an accounts receivable problem as such. That's it. It's just,
yeah, okay.
It's just simply a report, not a...
Yeah. Requires no action. There are some people, and you will, as you dig into this a little more, that just have a personal issue about the fact that they have an empty lot, even though if they agreed during the purchase of the lot, they've long forgotten to pay for the water access. And they that runs contrary to their own personal feelings. They don't want to do it. And the board has looked into alternatives. The easiest one and the less costly is the lien. We've looked at collections, you know, they collect half.
Right, exactly.
If you get anything, but they don't get anything unless they collect.
Right.
Depending on the company.
Right.
But that doesn't include or preclude the fact they're going to pay in the future.
Yeah. Correct. And what this will play into or become a factor, relatively small, but a factor when we're determining how much to charge for the repayment of the USDA loan. And what number do we divide the amount by? And do we, for instance, with foreknowledge, anticipate that the folks 1 through 14 or so are not going, if they're not paying these fees, they're not going to be paying the USDA loan fees either. And so when we calculate how much everyone should pay, it may have to be a little bit higher for us to collect 100% of what we need to collect, because we know that some small number of people are not going to pay us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think we should let these folks off the hook. You know, if we're charging other people who have lots, who are paying their bills, their proportionate USDA amount, then we need to certainly charge these accounts. Now, obviously, that creates an additional collection problem, but why would we give them a buy on that? Just because we don't think we can collect the money.
And I'm sorry, Andy, I misspoke. If I led you to believe that that's what I was suggesting, I was not suggesting.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting that we not charge them. I think they should be charged the same amount that everybody else does. I think just that up front, we recognize that some small number, 14 of the people we bill, are not going to pay us. That's all. And so if we're going to collect 100% of what we need to pay the USDA, we need to collect a dollar more or $2 more from the large number of people so that we'll have enough money. That's all. And that we bill these people for exactly what everybody else gets billed for.
Okay.
Some of these are customers that pay their water bill. Some of the 14, I don't know how many, are multiple lot owners, have a dwelling on two lots, and it's a third lot that they philosophically don't want to pay for.
Yes.
There are a few of those. I don't know exactly how many, but probably not more than two or three.
Do we know, Bob or Lee or...
go ahead.
Anyone. is any one of these the same person who's embroiled in that lawsuit in the Homeowners Association?
I don't believe so, no. No. No, I know who you're speaking of, and no. No, the when the board allowed the combining of lots, and this was two or three years ago, maybe 4 years ago, there are a couple of property owners that have three lots, and they would we allow them to combine two because they had a dwelling on two lots. They pay two different fees for that, but they would not pay for the third one. They weren't paying for it before. They refused to pay for it before. And even with the combining of the lots, they refused to pay. So we just went for the lien. And as the properties sell, our liens are paid off. Now, you always will run the risk of waiting in line behind others. I mean, we understand that. But it seems to be, while it may not be expeditious, it seems to be at present seems to be the smarter way. Now, if there's some other alternative, sure.
Okay.
Sure. I
Yeah, my question was just more educational. It's kind of an interesting reality. If the Homeowners Association has a lawsuit over their fees, it's curious that we don't have a similar situation with our fees.
Well, that's because we mitigated ours, I think. The Homeowners Association beef is a little bit different, but it does have to do with multiple lots and the HOA charging for multiple membership. and we mitigated that as it applied to us. It's a little bit different. We could devote a meeting talking just about the HOA, and we won't.
Another question, John?
Yes, sir.
Is there any low-hanging fruit where you can get, move some of these down, you know, where the number is small and the people who work might be willing to knock some of that off?
You mean cutting a deal?
Yeah.
We had that last year. Property owner came in and was selling off a piece of property. We had a $13,000 or $14,000 lien on a piece of property that went, I think, for $20,000. And he asked us to set aside the lien, and we chose not to. Property sold, and we were paid off. That was the last time that that matter was broached. Yeah, we have not reached out, on your point, we have not reached out to those in arrears and offered any type of mitigation, no.
Is there some small ones that are...
Well, small now. Yes. Yes. There's no question in our mind that all the individual property owners know exactly what our position is.
Can I ask a question, Mike?
Sure.
Yeah.
What are the case for and against foreclosure? Is it more expensive than lien collection?
Just the transaction costs. It's a hassle and an expense for us to have to do it. So I think for the most part, it makes more sense to wait until there's a sale of the house, and then we don't have to go through that process.
So even in the bigger ones, the $14,000, $10,000 ones, not worth it? It would be maybe preferable to go to the collection agency?
Yeah, I mean, at some point, though, it makes sense to crunch those numbers. I mean, I've never provided a dollar amount on what it would cost to go through that process, but we could look into it and then do a cost-benefit on at what point does it make sense for us to foreclose.
So it could almost be a policy if you owe so much money, you're going to get a foreclosure.
Right. A certain amount of time and $70 or something like that. That can make sense.
We've been looked into on those property owners that have multiple lots that are paying customers for their water service but refuse to pay, of going after them to shut their water off. Well, it turns out our position wasn't as solid as we thought it was, or it could have been, so we backed off. And the property owners that have the combined lots are paying their just dues, but they won't pay on the third one.
Full stop. Okay.
And where we make a nexus between the two or among the three, discretion was a better part of valor in that matter, and we chose not to. So. Okay. Aged accounts, anything else on that? We'll reschedule this for the next meeting.
Do you want me to spend a little bit of time in the meantime to just kind of lay out the foreclosure process and, you know, ballpark costs, just so we have that in our toolbox?
Could you refer a couple of examples we have to Michael that are on the list?
Okay.
And then you can work from a note.
Just put it in a hypothetical. We don't even need to apply it to a specific example. I'll just put together
a
description of the process and what it might cost us.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Item 3.
I'm going to put it on the table. I will move that the board adopt the agenda distribution policy as indicated on the paperwork distributed with the agenda.
Is there a second?
So why do we need this?
One moment, please. Is there a second? Okay. Matters dies for lack of a second. Do you want to discuss the matter?
Sure.
Got it.
I do not believe that the receiving the full packet 4 days in advance of the meeting, and in fact we don't receive the packet 4 days in advance of the meeting all the time,
is sufficient time for me as a board member to review the information and be prepared at the board meeting to discuss the various things that need to, that are being discussed, that are being presented. I think that also applies to committee work. I think that committee members should be presented with the materials that are going to be discussed at a committee meeting sufficiently far in advance that they can review that material. One of the arguments against this would be, well, gee, we need every last minute to get stuff ready, but I will remind board members that up until a few months ago, we were meeting every month, and we are now meeting every other month, so there is now 2 months to prepare for the board meeting and not just 1 month. And basically what I'm trying to get to here is we need to be better prepared. We need to do our homework further in advance, present the information to the board further in advance so that people can review it, number one. Number two, even if we don't do that, I believe that our membership, our shareholders, and are entitled to know exactly what it is we're going to be talking about at a board meeting. And so I think the full packet, obviously not including information that would be discussed in executive session, should be posted to our website at whatever the time limit is. In by proposed policy, it would be the dates as included in that policy. If not, it would be the legal requirement of 4 days. But for example, I do not believe that the agenda provides our membership with a sufficient detail knowledge of what's going to be talked about at a meeting so that they can make a decision whether or not they should be here or not. And right now, all we do is we post the agenda. We do not post the material. And as far as I know, if a shareholder came in and said, I would like a copy of the board packet, I'm not sure that we share that. Did we share that with them?
Yes.
Okay, if they come in and ask for it, but I think it should be on the, I think it should be on the website. I don't think they should have to come in. Particularly someone from the Bay Area cannot come in, or someone who doesn't live here can't get access to it except online.
I'll just comment real quick. I mean, this is board's call. I don't have an issue with any of it necessarily, but just in staff's defense, it used to be up until a few years ago that the board packet did go out almost 2 weeks in advance of board meetings, if I recall, or 10 days probably. And I was the one that urged them to stop doing that. So I'll take the responsibility for that. And it took me a while to convince Lee to wait until the legal requirement of 4 days before you send the board packet out, and it's usually, and it was more of an issue with the monthly, when we were doing monthly meetings. I think the time pressure is reduced now, but it was mostly because if a board packet goes out 10 days in advance of the board meeting, and we're still working on things that, you know, we need to add something to the agenda, or we need to finalize, you know, stuff that's going to be in the board packet, and then we're sending out revisions to the agenda, and we're doing updates, and it just became more burdensome and confusing, I think. And so my recommendation with staff, and this is true of all the public agencies that I work for, was wait until that time when you have to send it out before you do, so that as things are evolving, the agenda, once it does go out, is set, basically. That's not to say, though, especially when we have, you know, complex matters that require a lot of board attention, like for example, the whole CCWD contract, that was definitely not something that we didn't share with the board until that agenda packet went out, and then expected the board to be ready to, you know, take action on it a few days later. You know, that's something where drafts went out over months, and you know, there was a lot of discussion of it. So and the USDA project now falls into that category of, you know, this is stuff where board members need time to process this information. So when it comes to matters like that, the board should have time to, you know, review documentation and be prepared to take action on it. But there was, you know, there was that complication of sending out the agenda. I think there's just a balance. Sending out the agenda too early also has some downsides to it. But I, again, this is all up to the board. As long as we are meeting the minimum standard of the Open Meeting Act, I don't have an issue with it.
Comments to the board? Andy?
Well, I think the lack of a second says it loud and clear in my mind. I understand the points, but I think, you know, creating yet another policy is just becoming too bureaucratic, and, you know, quite honestly, I'm looking for ways to reduce bureaucracy as opposed to increasing it. So my thought is let's move on the agenda.
What is the board's opinion about posting the information to the website, the full packet?
Why wouldn't we?
I'm sorry?
It's all
public. Why wouldn't we?
It's all public record, if that's the right term. I see no reason not to do it.
The difference is it's not necessarily public record. So, and this is where we get into the distinction between a mutual water company and a public agency. It is information that is absolutely, you know, available to our shareholders. But we do not technically have to disclose that to the general public. And when you put it on your website, that's what you're doing. It doesn't mean you can't do it, if that's the pleasure of the board. I don't have a problem with it, but we don't have to. And it's not public record. You know, somebody who's not a shareholder can't send us, or, you know, show up here and demand to see documents like that.
But people that are not shareholders can attend meetings. I mean, the Open Meeting Act talks about it. But we cannot exclude.
You can.
If someone walks in off the street and is asked, am I a shareholder? And no.
There is a definition of eligible persons in the
yes.
Open Meeting Act, and it is limited to shareholders.
And people representing shareholders,
right.
Yes.
The or supervisors or somebody has to be
local representatives,
right.
Things like that. But it's not, we're not like a public agency where everything we do is part of the record for the general public to review.
I see no reason not to post it.
I'm going to caution you from putting the financials on there just from what Michael just said also. And if we're going to, then maybe we need to make a private portion of our website where a shareholder actually calls in, gets a number, if that's the correct way to say that, so that they can put in their code and then get that information.
Yeah, I don't want to create an exhausted, complicated process. I mean, I think the question is here, should we post the what we're going to be talking about at our meetings? And then we call that the agenda. And I think the answer is yes. We do. And now the materials that support the agenda is what you're talking about.
Right.
I see no reason why we should not. Sorry to use all the negatives. But.
The only, I would maybe put Lee's question to an accountant is, you know, because we do disclose a lot of financial information in our agenda packet and even our ledger. So is that information that could potentially be used to harm us if it's just available to the public is the question. I would think maybe we should put that to our accountant.
Who would you suggest for something? I don't mean by person. Do you mean like the auditor that we've hired?
Or the reviewer. Either one would know.
Yeah. Because it's not like we put our, you know, account login and password in the packet. So we're not giving people access to accounts by disclosing all that information, but we are laying bare our financials.
And if I could also put out, there is the recap of the meeting that goes in. The minutes are posted within 3 days of the meeting. And if someone does have a question, they are welcome to come to the next board meeting and sit and ask a question. Or, you know, call us and say what happened, why. So there is a recap,
right.
Just not the packet.
Detail.
Yeah.
Would there be a fiscal?
The only area of sensitivity that I can see has to do with our various vendors. And somebody might decide they want to take umbrage with the fact that we're using Blue Cross or Blue Shield or something like that. And the way around that is to chunk this down. Create a category of utilities, create a category of professional services, create a category of repair and maintenance, and not disclose who the specific vendor is. But otherwise, why wouldn't we? I can't think of too many non-shareholders being at all interested in any of this stuff. So creating yet another policy or practice to exclude as opposed to include, just doesn't feel right to me.
And just to add also, it is not uncommon for public agencies to do this. Their agenda packets are commonly available. Including financial information.
And salaries and, yes.
I guess my question would just be, since we haven't done it in the past, maybe check with our account and make sure there's nothing in our format that it shouldn't be disclosed and get that level of comfort first. That would be my only concern, but other than that.
Sounds good. In terms of staff time, would there be a fiscal impact? I mean, we're putting more hours into posting this stuff?
Not if the packet stays the way it is and it's just a matter of then putting it on the website. I don't think that's much of a burden. If it requires them to redact and repackage, then maybe, but probably not.
Can I suggest that we defer action on that particular item until the next meeting, and that we have, and then others then have a chance to review the questions that Michael has raised, and we can then.
Well, we can do that, but in the interim, I think that unless we can come up with some reason, we should not disclose this. And I can't think of anything that we're dealing with that is so privileged that our own shareholders shouldn't hear about or read about it. And if somebody that works for CCWD or East Bay Mud reads about it, let them. I think that we should put on the documentation that supports our agenda, and I would say we ought to start that. And meanwhile, do what you want. And to at the next board meeting, if we find out that it's caught us some sort of issue, we'll stop. But I can't see. There are a lot of people in the Bay Area that. There may have one time been an expectation that if you want to talk to the board, will you travel up here and we'll sit down, we'll listen to you. That's nonsense. They have another way to do it. And if the fact they become more educated by what we put out on our website, the better off we're going to be. So we don't need a policy. I mean, why don't we just extend what we do on the notification of meetings on the website and include the information that is supporting the agenda.
And what do I do with, we have three engagement letters in this, per note. In this packet, I have three engagement letters from Evans-Patsy County, which is, it tells the board what they plan on doing for the review, what they plan on doing for filing our taxes, what they plan on doing for, if we hire them for next year, for quarterly reviews. Does that get posted?
Yes.
Why not?
Okay.
Why not?
So no contracts. If I've got contracts in there, the contracts wouldn't get posted. But everything in this packet, no one sees a problem with posting.
No.
Okay.
If that item was going to be discussed because it was a contract in executive session, the answer would be no. It would not be posted. But if it's going to be discussed in open session, then the answer is yes.
Okay.
I agree.
So are we checking with the accountant first and then getting an information disclosure for it?
Michael's suggestion is to check with the accountant when it comes to issues of what disclosing, what they are looking at.
My only concern is, I completely agree with you, there is no harm in disclosing all this to shareholders or other interested parties. my concern is just making sure that there's nothing in here that could be used, you know, from an identity theft or financial crime.
Financial crime would be.
Okay.
Right, and that is not something I'm necessarily qualified to.
Oh, well, then we'll scrutinize for that.
So let's just make sure we're not exposing ourselves in some way.
Okay, well, we do that now. Then you wouldn't put my credit card number on the internet.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Somebody else has already.
Yeah, well, I have it. I'm going to buy dinner tonight.
So we're going to post the packet.
So the henceforth, we're gonna post along with the agenda the materials to support the agenda. And if there's anything that's in the document, in the board package that is considered sensitive in nature or privileged, or is a matter that is exclusive for closed session, that will be excluded. And there's any doubt, if it's all right with the board, if there's any doubt on what goes on and what goes off, I'll discuss it with the manager. Is that agreeable?
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
I agree. Right. I agree.
Anything else on this? Thank you. Item B. Sitting in for the general manager is
Bill Hyman.
Water production, consumption, usage. People are still drinking water and brushing their teeth.
As far as I know, not complaining too much.
Okay.
Did you want me to go ahead and go over Dave's
briefly,
packet here? Okay. The wells 2 and 3 drawdown is pretty much on par with last year. 160 feet above the pump. Last year we had 162, so we're within a foot or two on the highs, the lows, and the average. Well 4 is about the same. I think it's actually coming up quite a bit, almost 20 feet. It's the same as last year, December 16. I think it's doing very, very well, and I actually do believe we could have put a bigger pump in that and got more production out of it, but there's nothing we could do about that now.
Because?
Well, we don't see the heavy hit on the drawdown. We're pumping it and pumping it and pumping it, and it's recovering overnight. So we could have drawn more water out of that, I believe, and definitely got more production out of it without affecting the drawdown levels. But that was Ludor from Scalmanini's engineered sized pump for that well, and now we're kind of stuck with it. But
well, for some reason we'd have to rebore.
We wouldn't have to rebore. No, what we'd have to do is pull the pump, move the house, put a different pump down there, re-plumb it for probably electrical and some of the headwaters, the headworks of the wellhead. But
what's the maximum discharge now?
90 gallons a minute. We're running at 90.3% of capacity on the pump, and we're getting 90 gallons a minute out of it. Now, the reason we can't go to 100% is because of conflicts with well 3. I can't choke down well 3 anymore on that without raising the pressure on the wellhead. So that's about all we can get out of it right now that I feel comfortable with. On our totals and usage, from December last year, I don't have that, but from January, our total for the year was 46 million gallons. That's pretty low compared to years past. Significantly low.
That is remarkably consistent with last year.
Yes, and last year, you know, it was brought up that last year we were in stage 2 drought, and this year we pretty much weren't. So that's either a sign of how much people did not conserve last year, or how much it did not matter that we were in stage 2 this year. Moving on to wells production. In 2017, we produced a little more with the wells. This year in December, or this month in December, because I think we had a little bit more usage out of the tank 6 area versus CCWD, as you see down in the lower part of the chart there. We did use a little bit more of the wells than purchasing water from CCWD. And that's just by nature, the way that our system is designed and cut in half. The Blue Lake Springs water side just used more water, even though it shows that we use pretty much 50-50 CCWD and Blue Lake Springs on our totals. So that's about it for the wells consumption production. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, so Billy, question, you know, given the lack of precipitation this year so far, what is the water company's perspective around stage two, stage three probabilities or possibilities for this coming summer?
I would say let's wait and see. I would say at most, I don't see us going any further than stage two drought. That's my opinion. Just looking at our well recoveries on wells two and three and four, they're doing very well. I think if we continue to just monitor them right now and see what our consumption is throughout the beginning of spring and make a determination then. But I think we'll be okay. We'll be all right.
So just for general knowledge, here's something I observed yesterday. I was in the process of planting some spring flower bulbs, and I was using an electrical or a battery-powered bit to create the holes.
Sure.
And 6 inches down, the ground is bone dry. I was absolutely shocked. It's bone dry. It was just like it was the middle of the summer. So, the 11 or 12 inches of rain that we've gotten since October, has only penetrated about 6 inches.
Yeah, I would say we're pretty minimal on our precipitation, and we're definitely concerned. I don't want to see California slip into another drought like we did. But as far as Blue Lake Springs water, we're doing okay. Our contract to CCWD, the wells drawdowns are showing that they're doing great. We're okay sitting on water right now, and I think we can stay in stage one for the time being, unless we see some significant changes.
Okay.
One thing that we have not talked about is the word conservation. It's missing out of most of our discussions. It's missing when you read what's on our website. We've gotten a little bit lax. I want to see that we pick that up, whether it's the signage up on the roadway or it's back on our website, and it's still okay to conserve.
Yes.
I think not that people have forgotten, that they've forgotten. And it's time to get that message out again. And I'll ask the staff if you please put it on the energize the website and everything else that we use to remind people that it's still okay to conserve. Any questions of the manager? So, in your opinion, the business of water delivery is
great.
About what it was and trending in last year's, and yep. Nothing out of the ordinary. No leaks. No runs, no grips, no errors.
No, we're doing good. It was great.
Okay. I'd like to thank Bill for the tour of the infrastructure last month. Appreciate
that.
Nice job.
Interesting stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, for a small company, it's complicated.
All right. Any questions of the manager? Long range, you there? Tom, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Sorry. How's there? Is it raining in Arizona?
No, it's about 75 degrees and clear.
Same here.
I know that's funny. I'm just not laughing.
It's going to be 65 here, right?
Yeah, it's not that much different.
John, you're up.
Okay, so actually, Bob, I had sent you an email, but probably too late for you to read it. The first topic that I had in my package, or the long-range planning committee package, was to talk about the committee membership. I noticed after I submitted the package that that is a topic down under new business. So
wanted to know, want me to discuss it now or just wait until new business?
Why don't you go ahead with it now? And I'm sorry I missed your message this morning.
Yeah, no problem. So the first chart within the package, I'm sure all of you know that because of various reasons with Lee Bateman's schedule and the amount of work he has as treasurer, he stepped down from the Long Range Planning Committee since our last meeting. At our December Long Range Planning Committee meeting, Joe, Sharon, and I discussed what our thoughts were regarding that vacancy, and this chart just kind of describes the thought process that we went through during that meeting. And we felt that with that vacancy, we have a few options there. We could open up that vacancy to a volunteer within our existing board of director members. We can continue the Long Range Planning Committee indefinitely with the remaining four members, Andy, Sharon, Joe, and myself. Or we could solicit a new member from the Blue Lake Springs shareholders in good standing. So we further on went to discuss that if no board of directors volunteer, we could continue with the remaining four members for the time being, but in parallel, use a process where we solicit a new member from the Blue Lake Springs shareholders, and we could advertise kind of the desired skills and criteria that we would be looking for in a candidate and post that on the Blue Lake Springs Mutual Water Company website and in the bubbler with contact information for anybody that was thinking about applying for it and had any questions, and or and we could also spread by word of mouth about the community to anybody that we felt might have those desired skills and criteria, then review any potential candidate in the Long Range Planning Committee. And if we came up with a selection, we would pose that to the board. So we didn't really close on it within the Long Range Committee. We discussed coming up with those desired skills and criteria that we would be looking for, things like a project management background, some financial experience would help, ability to multitask. Things like that were some of the criteria items that were brought up, or skills that were brought up. Criteria were available to meet monthly, a desire to improve the Blue Lake Springs community, willing to share in the responsibility of taking on the assignments that come up within the Long Range Planning Committee, and as well as being a team player. At this point, it's still a topic for discussion within the Long Range Planning Committee, but wanted to throw this out there and see if there was any discussion within this Board of Director meeting on this.
Comments of the board? None here.
Okay, so if there are no volunteers within the Board of Directors, we'll continue with the process showing under the second bullet there. That'll be brought up and discussed within the Long Range Planning Committee in our probably get out some information to the team with email, and then we'll definitely be discussing it at our next Long Range Committee meeting.
If there is anyone here that is interested in volunteering, I'll let you get a hold of Tom Schneider and discuss the matter with him.
All right, thanks.
Sure.
The next chart, want to state up front, too, that there's been quite a bit of items, a lot of work being done over the last month or month and a half, even over the last week here, there's going to be a few red lines that I'm going to bring up throughout these charts, just based on things that have just happened over the last day or two. So this first chart, what I wanted to do, I can't remember if I brought any of these type charts forward to the board in the past. We've discussed them in a couple of our long-range committee meetings. This shows the kind of the more detailed information on what the interim loan and USDA loans have on our financials over time. So this first chart starts, details up to the start of construction, which is currently estimated to be the end of June of this year. So during that time period leading up to construction start, Blue Lake Springs must cover all the contractor costs that are incurred. We will, whatever that dollar amount comes to, Blue Lake Springs will be eligible for reimbursement for all or a portion of the cost up to that start of construction. So we've clarified and asked those types of questions. If we spend, as an example, $850,000, based on where our financials are, we have the option to request reimbursement for the full $850.
The following participant has entered the conference.
John Pedry.
We can ask for a portion of that. It's up to us. So the second bullet, MC Engineering has been paid a total of $582,500 for their engineering and design work that was billed through their November billing. So this is where a few of the red lines come in. It shows there in bold italics, they had submitted Addendum 1, a change order, just recently, and over the last couple weeks, we had been working on that with them, and over the last day or two here, reviewed that within the full long-range planning committee. That estimate of $289,000, based on if we do include the amounts that would be spent before construction, that $289.6 is $356.7. So, which makes the total reimbursement up to the start of construction not $872,000, but $917,000. Next bullet there, the amount reimbursed would be included in the interim loan interest payment. And interest or a portion is eligible to be included in the USDA loan if funds remain. So the interest that we are going to be paying as a result of the interim loan, those loan advancements will be paying for our construction costs from June 30th through estimated to be about December of 2019. The risks associated with these numbers are, in Aaron's opinion, putting aside the extra that has been requested under Addendum 1, we feel that there's plus or minus around $10,000 of potential scope increases or overruns between now and the start of construction. The way we mitigate that is by close management of any other additional scope changes and keeping costs within our authorized budgets. As you know, Sharon is working very closely from a technical standpoint on
the efforts being done under the engineering and design tasks leading up to construction. So for this time period leading up to the start of construction, based on our discussions, the Long Range Planning Committee recommendation, the givens there are that the plan has always been to be reimbursed for all of the USDA loan approved scope efforts. So at the point of this reimbursement, at the start of construction, we will know what the total engineering and design cost is to date. So we will, right now, as I mentioned, we're estimating it to be 917 at the start of construction. Once we get to that point, we're going to know exactly what that dollar value is and what the approved contract amount is for construction based on the bids that come in. So once we get to the start of construction, we're going to know what the engineering and design cost is up to that point, along with what the bid is that we will be deciding to move forward with. At that point, our internal budget reserves and potential future reserves our needs there make it, I'm sorry, got off my train of thought here. Our internal budget reserves and potential reserves needs to make it feasible to cover these costs. So what I'm saying there is we don't have enough in our reserves to cover those costs. Just the engineering design efforts are $917K, and once we get into construction, those dollar amounts are in the millions. So I'm saying there that our reserves won't cover that. The item D there, although we will be paying interim loan interest on these costs to date, the Long Range Planning Committee recommends reimbursement up to that point. So up to the start of construction, we're recommending that we ask for full reimbursement of the 917 estimated cost.
And Tom, that includes interest on the bridge loan.
Well, at the start of construction, that's when the interest will start. So up to that point, there is no interest yet.
Okay, and when and if it starts, the intention is to apply for reimbursement, correct?
That we'll get into that on the next page or two.
Okay.
Yeah, so that first page dealt with leading up to construction.
Got it.
Didn't include any of the interest on the interim loan yet. But we'll talk about that now. The next page, we get into during construction.
Indulge me one second. Are there any questions to the board on the first matter on the start of construction and so forth and so on? Any questions about the issue of reimbursements? The only looming question at this point, and it's going to be covered a little bit, is on this interim loan issue. And kind of who pays for what. But on what has been discussed thus far, I'm sorry, are there any questions on Lee?
Bob, I have some overarching questions about cash flow and our reserves, but I'll wait for those and we'll come back. These numbers are influenced part of that.
Absolutely. Okay. Any questions to the board at all? Okay. Megatron, go ahead, please.
So the next page, which I believe is page 25 in your package. So during construction, once construction starts, the interim loan kicks in, and they can release funds to our account to pay the contractors based on approval from the USDA, and those payments are made through that process to the contractors within 24 hours. So the loan agency, in working with USDA approval on those, will make those payments. So we're not going to have to cover the payments to the contractors during construction. That happens fast enough where we don't have to front any money there.
Okay.
during construction, which is currently estimated to be the end of June through November-December timeframe 2019, Blue Lake Springs will pay monthly interest payments to the interim loan agency based on the amounts that are advanced. CoBank, the main lender that we've been talking to, their interest when we first started discussing this with them, it's based on the LIBOR variable rate, which is some European type of rate where they look at the average between banks there, and based on that monthly LIBOR rate, it was originally 3.24 when we first started talking to CoBank. I looked at, we had a meeting with them on December 21st. Right before that meeting, I looked online to see what it was running, and it had increased from 3.24 in November to 3.53 as of 12/20, which was the day before our meeting with them. So I brought that up with CoBank during that meeting and talked about what their gut feel was as far as increases to the percentage rate during the time of our interim loan. And they said that conservatively, they feel that the interest rate could increase by a quarter of a percent semi-annually. Based on that, that results in a 4.03% at the beginning of construction. As part of that program with CoBank, there's a patronage program that pays cash dividends that discounts our percent by 0.48 based on the annual balance of our loan, and that credit comes. For instance, if our loan starts June 30th of this year, whatever the balance of our loan is for June 30th through the end of the year, we'll get a credit of 0.48 on that average balance, and that will be credited next March. So that's how the process works there. The notes there, the interest payments or a portion thereof, are eligible to be added to the USDA loan and reimbursed to us at the end of construction, if funds remain. That qualifying statement in there, because we won't know exactly where we are with our total possible reimbursement costs until we get to the end of construction. The interim loan interest, this is just another point that I wanted to point out, is interim loan interest is not included in our USDA loan application. Based on the above interest rates, an estimated drawdown schedule with the MCE Addendum 1 included, here's where I have a few more red lines based on incorporating the Addendum 1 values, just to give you what those dollar amounts are if, moving forward with the Addendum 1 if that's approved. So the Addendum 1 total was $89,000. However, so this includes that dollar amount, the $89,000 that was included in Addendum 1 if we approve it. But the interest rate, based on having that included, that $66,000 for 2018 becomes $67,000. The $366,000 for 2019 becomes $368,000. $1,000 for 2020 stays the same. So the total interest, if we incorporate Addendum 1, comes to $436,000. Any questions on that page?
No, you answered the question. Go ahead.
What is your assumed average monthly loan balance?
It's on the next page. Let's go to the next page. So after our conference call with CoBank, and based on the interest rate predictions that they gave us and how the credit works and all that, I came up with this spreadsheet that I sent to Bentley Hodges at CoBank and had him validate it. He made a few minor adjustments, and since then I've incorporated the Addendum 1 increase. So you can see there in this spreadsheet the amount of our drawdowns by month. I don't know, up on about the fourth or fifth line, the incremental drawdowns and the cum drawdowns. It does not include the holdback. So our total loan is $12.23 million or something like that. This amounts to about $11.5 million. So does that answer your question, Andy?
So correct me if I'm wrong. This shows obviously the incremental, drawdown by month and then the cumulative amount. But are we not reimbursed along the way on a monthly basis for costs by USDA?
No. Our USDA reimbursements do not start until the end of construction.
Okay.
So during the construction period, the interim lender is paying for all those costs. They're funding all those costs, and we're paying the interest on it. If funds are available at the end of construction, we're eligible to get reimbursed for all the interest. Any other questions along those lines?
No, that's. I think that's the biggest question, and the one perhaps we cannot answer is that when all is said and done, how much is this interim loan going to cost us?
And so the bottom line, as I mentioned, I'm going to send Lee Schmid updates to give all the corrected figures that I'm mentioning that I had to change late yesterday. So the bottom line on this page, this Excel spreadsheet picture, the total down at the bottom would be $436,200 in that gray box instead of the $433,000. So, and you can see there kind of how that that credit works. It's not reimbursed until March of the following year. But I think this gives us it's not going to be exact, and things are going to change over time, but I think this gives us a pretty good picture of the amount of interest that we're going to be paying that 18 months during construction.
Tom, this is Michael. Can you copy me on that email too? Because I'm still barking at USDA about a waiver, and this is very useful information. I don't know if it's going to get us anywhere, but it just highlights the uncertainty of this.
Yeah, it's certainly a very large dollar value that we have to come up with that wouldn't otherwise be required if we didn't have the interim loan.
Right.
So. Yeah, Tom? This is John Pedry on the line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say also, and I'm glad that Mike's going to go ahead and try to get with USDA. And talking with them, they also brought up the idea, whether good or bad, of adding a supplemental loan at the end. And they've done that in other projects for me, in some cases grant money, to compensate at the end of the project. The problem is, obviously, it's going to raise your total repayment to USD in the long run. But that's available. And then the other issue is that we have contingency of based on construction at $9.5 million, there will be $950,000 contingency built into this during construction. You always want to carry at least 5% of that contingency over during construction for any possible change orders that may occur during construction. So there is some money available, knock on wood, based on what the bids come in at the end of the project. So those are other alternatives that can be explored as a result of this interim loan. So I want to throw that out.
So as we move through time here, and we're going to have more information that's going to be absolute. For instance, when we get to the end of the start of construction, we're going to know what all the costs are up to that date. We've got estimates right now, but we'll know exactly what the costs are up to that date. We'll have we won't know what total construction costs are, but we'll know what the bid is and what we're going to agree to moving forward with for the construction costs. And then as we move through construction, more information will become known, and we'll just have to, I'm basically saying, this is going to be fluid, and we're going to have to just manage it closely, decide at different points along the way, make decisions on how much we feel we're going to ask for in reimbursements versus whether or not we want to fund any of it out of our internal contingency reserves. Those will be the things that we're going to be providing information along the way and making decisions on which way we go. And
Tom, a quick question. Do we have any payment obligation, monthly payment obligation from the whole bank along the 18-month path?
We have to pay that interest monthly.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so there's no payment against the principal, but we do pay for the, the interest.
Correct.
So at this point, there's no guarantee that the USDA loan will cover all of our costs, some of which would include the interim loan interest. Because when we originally applied for the loan, we didn't consider, nor were we compelled to consider, any secondary loan possibilities.
Right.
So, conservatively, we won't know if we can cover how much of the $433,623 in interest we're going to be paying over the next 3 years. We don't know how much of that we can cover off with whatever's left on in the floor scrapings, if you will, from the major loan itself, correct?
Right. Once we get to the end of construction, we're going to know what the all-up costs are and whether or not we can get reimbursed for that interest if there's enough money left. We'll know at that point. John mentioned that the construction contingency reserve within the USDA loan is around, he mentioned $950,000. I think it's around $978,000 is a contingency reserve in construction. If we get to the end and everything plays out the way it was estimated, that $978,000, if you took away the amount we're paying in interest, that $978,000 amounted to 10% contingency reserve. If we were to pay the interest on this interim loan, that $978,000 would be reduced to $543,000 or somewhere down in that range. So their interest or their percent of contingency reserve would be 5%. So it drops from 10% down to 5%, which is still feasible, but we won't know until we go through the process of the construction.
Tom, I'm going to, argue that we should not do any of our planning on the assumption that the construction reserve will be used for anything other than construction additional costs. That was when the original, now I wasn't here when the original plan was made up, but I presume that the construction reserve was calculated based on everybody's best estimate of the money that we should have set aside for unanticipated costs in the project. And nothing we're doing now changes any of those anticipated costs. It doesn't move the boulder that's in the way or anything else that we don't know about. And so I think it is, well, I won't characterize. I do not think any of our planning should anticipate using the contingency reserve for anything other than the project. And we need to plan for funding additional costs outside the project by other means. And if at the end of the project we get a present of several hundred thousand dollars because the contingency reserve wasn't used, that's great. We'll figure out how to do that. But if we wind up at the end of the project anticipating that we're going to have $500,000 or something available for other costs and it isn't there, we're in deep trouble. Well,
as I said, I agree with you. And as we move along throughout the construction process, we're going to, as I mentioned, this whole analysis will continually be updated. And you know, by the time we get to the end of construction, we'll be able to answer that question.
Right. Let me ask you a specific question. In the interim financing, are we going to be able to be reimbursed for the MC engineering costs that we will have paid prior to the start of construction?
Yeah, if you're still on that spreadsheet page, that first month up there, June, you can see the first draw there. That figure is based on my revised spreadsheet, including Addendum 1, that is really $1.537 million instead of the $1.492. That includes all the costs for NC Engineering up to the start of construction, plus the construction costs for that first month.
Okay, so the $917,000 of NC Engineering expenses prior to the start of the project. We have to fund that until the start of the project, but then we'll be reimbursed for that by the interim financing.
Correct.
Okay.
Tom, quick question. This is Michael. Just to understand the impact here, if we didn't have the interim financing, we would still be charged interest during the construction period on these draws. It would just be at the 1.875 rate, right?
Correct.
So the impact is not 433,623. It's the difference between this and the whatever the 1.875 charge.
Right.
It's about half.
Right. So roughly half.
It's roughly half of the interest cost.
Even a little.
Okay. So here's a question that it may be that John Pedry is the only one that can legitimately answer this, but I'll throw it out anyway. And what I'm trying to get to, and I asked this of Tom and Sharon yesterday, and that is, have we designed or are we designing a Chevrolet or a Mercedes kind of system? Clearly there's a huge cost delta between what it costs to build a Chevrolet versus a Mercedes. And I just am not, well, I don't know where on the continuum a $10 million investment in construction, gets us. Does it get us a Chevrolet or does it get us a Mercedes or is it somewhere in between?
Yeah, I think you're right, Andy. I think John and Sharon are the best ones to answer that. Based on all the meetings I've been in and the discussions, regarding the scope. My non-professional or non-technical takeaway is that we're trying to, you know, to implement a complete system that that isn't a Mercedes, but satisfies all the, you know, all the requirements to meet all of our water flows necessary. I mean, I'm sure John and Sharon can explain it a lot better than that, but, you know, the discussions are always go back and forth between is that really necessary or not. So a lot of that discussion goes on, and, you know, I don't, in my opinion, I don't think it's over-designed. I think it's meeting the requirements that we need to meet. John, you might want to add more there.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about the Chevrolet and Mercedes, I think it's more like a Kia. It has a 100,000-mile warranty built into it. What we're trying to do is build a system that's going to give you a long-term life and stability and an operational, take away operational issues that may come about. Now, is it, boy, I'll tell you, the only thing that I think we've done that's, that may be of an extra cost, but I think it's duly needed, is the fact that we're going with a class 200 water pipe. It's plastic. It's class 200. It gives you an extra 50 to 75 pound pressure rate higher. It's thicker. It's more durable than a class 150, which some areas use. What I see now, especially in the higher areas, elevations, are you going with class 200? So it's a common pipe to use. It's becoming more and more common. And I've used it in all of Lincoln. I did get some pushback from some of the contractors that wanted to use class 50, but I went with class 200. That's the only area where I think we're adding some security to the construction. What we tried to do, and I spent a ton of time up there, is design this thing off the roadway. And it's taken, it literally will require us putting this on the shoulder so we don't have to pave long sections of road. Now that paving runs about $18 a foot, so I've done a lot of value engineering in terms of laying that pipeline out to try to cut costs. The meter services, they're pretty much typical in what you'll see. The only area where we could probably do a little bit more value engineering when we get all said and done, and I think Billy can attest to that and help us with that, and that's the lift station, the booster station. Those things can be expensive. They can be built somewhat inexpensively. So we're looking at that as an area where we can maybe cut a few costs. But overall, I think the way we've designed the system is really, it's cost effective. We've taken a lot of time to lay it out so we don't have any extra costs in terms of paving and obstruction. So I feel pretty confident. Now, again, it's all going to be up to the contractor when they bid. And the bidding climate time, and it's hard to say what will happen come April and May. I just don't know at this point when it comes to the bidding climate.
Yeah, so obviously where I'm going with this is, you know, for the board's information, I think we've already gotten, you know, a change of scope proposal from MC Engineering. Now, you know, the cost analysis that John and his team have done, you know, shows that, you know, there's actually a small savings as a result of that, but, you know, the whole construction project is probably, you know, all construction projects are subject to, are prone to change of scope parameters, and we have no idea what those are going to be. So my concern is, obviously, you know, the $12 million is a finite number beyond which, you know, we don't have any means, and I'm not sure our shareholders, you know, have a means to, you know, pay for those expenses. So it's incumbent on us, obviously, to really tightly manage the budget on this, including, you know, maybe limiting some of the the bells and whistles that, you know, in the short term that, you know, could be added at a later date.
Yeah, John Pedry again, and let me just say this. One approach that I've taken in all my projects, especially I think in Shasta County where I had a limited budget and we didn't have a way of going back into the kitty and bringing money out to help fund projects because we were someone on the low income end. I would put together at the end of during the bid phase a list of bid additives or deductive bid additives, whatever you want to call them. So the contractor would bid on a unit base price, and then we would have of the basic project, and then you would have things that you pulled out that you didn't think maybe, you know, that could have been pulled out or reduced some of the line work here and there. And then you have alternates where then you can afford based upon your final budget and based on those bid additives, so you know that your number going into construction is fairly stickable. So there's ways of bidding this thing with some alternates thrown in. So I just want to throw that out. It's common, but I'm not sure we'll have to do it in this case, but I just want to throw that out.
Well, I think it's incumbent on us to, you know, do it that way so that we know, you know, where the budget ultimately, you know, could end up.
Right.
And we have a $500,000 interest charge here that we hadn't anticipated.
That's true. And just so you know, I just want to hopefully give I'm meeting with a second contractor. I've already been out on the site with one. Two, and I'm going to be a third. The first one didn't give any information, really, but the second one went through my numbers and estimates and bid numbers and came up with a sheet that was very similar to mine. So I feel we're really comfortable with our numbers as we start putting estimates together. I have another contractor coming out that just did a project for CCWD, T&S, and we'll meet with Art hopefully next week out on the site. We're going to walk it, look at it, see if there's any anomalies or things that may be difficult, that I may have to tweak the estimate a little bit. But I'm trying to get that level of security also. So I just want to let you know that we're not going to this thing blindly. We're going to have, I believe, some real good numbers when we start the bid phase of this thing.
Well, the reality remains that when we look forward on the collection or the totaling of the interim loan interest, there's that $450,000 gorilla at the end of this process that we had not anticipated. And John Pedre, I'd ask you that, in your experience, do leftover contingency monies designed for construction allow reimbursement for interim loan interest monies?
The answer is yes. In talking with Pete, the state director, not only will we can apply whatever money is available at the end of construction, we'll use it all up. He also stated that they would give a supplement at a 1.875% interest rate if we needed it for $300,000 spread out over 40 years. It would be added to the total loan amount. And I don't know what that equals. It's not a big number spread out over 40 years, but that is available to us. I've had projects where they've given supplemental loans, and I've got a project where they've given some additional grant money. Mm-hmm. And that was prior to, obviously, prior to construction based on the other methods. But, yeah, so the answer to your question is yes. If there's money available, then it can be applied to any cost associated with this project, including the interim loan, based on what I got from Pete.
Provided, of course, there are monies left over in the project to cover such a thing. We understand.
That's correct. That's exactly correct.
Got it. Okay.
Bob, just to clarify, and if this is Lee Bateman. Anyone else correct me if I misstate here. What Michael pointed out was we're really talking about the interim financing is an additional cost over and above what we would have been paying in interest had we started with the USDA loan. So that the actual cost of interim financing is not $436,000. It's probably something more like $200,000.
The difference between
the
1.875.
1.875 and 3.6 or something.
Yeah, okay.
Does that, Tom, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, but I think, you know, the interim loan, as I showed there, based on the projected increases in percent, interest percent, you know, it's not going to go down to $200,000.
No, no, no. What I was saying is, well, we have to make the cash flow payments of interest. When we get to the end of the interim financing, we will have paid more for interest than we would have had it been under the USDA loan.
That's correct.
But the amount of additional cost is not $436,000. It's more like $200,000, because if we were under the USDA loan during construction, we would be paying at 1.8%, not 3.6%.
Yeah, and all I'm saying is we're not at 3.6%. We're above that, so that difference a little...
Okay, whatever it is, it's not the total interest we're paying on the interim, that's all.
I totally agree with that.
Whatever it is, it was not something we calculated on originally.
Right, it's a, yeah, right.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I'm thinking that for, you know, our planning purposes, you know, we need to plan such that half a million dollars of interest is included within the 12.2 or whatever that number is, million-dollar USDA loan, and not incremental to that. At this point in the project, and I think until we know what, you know, the construction numbers are, I would personally be comfortable saying, well, okay, you know, that's just an add-on to the 12.2. So that we're now at 12.7, and then, you know, we're looking at another loan. Because we have a credibility issue or factor with our, you know, shareholders that needs to be dealt with, and, you know, going back to them with hat in hand saying that, oh, oops, we missed this number, it's actually going to cost you, you know, something incrementally more, is not where I want to be.
Yeah, I hear you. And
yeah,
like I said earlier, we're just going to have to manage this closely, and as we get more and more, you know, actuals along the way and realize what our costs are going to lead up to, we'll make those decisions. But I agree, we don't want to just assume that we're going to go over that 12.2 million USDA loan. If there aren't any other questions, if we move on to the next page, it continues on with the write-up of during construction continued. I think it's probably page 20 in your package. What we wanted to do is try to identify the risks and any risk mitigation during the different phases. So during the construction, as I mentioned, we obviously have the interest rate hikes that were estimated by CoBank that I incorporated into that spreadsheet. However, in my last communication with Bentley Hodges at CoBank, he said there's a potential that at the end of 2019, we might get one more 3-month pickup there that drives it up to 4.7. With that extra interest rate over those last 3 months, it's only $5,000, but that's a risk. There could be changes. The board of directors at CoBank determined the patronage cash dividend percentage, which is the 0.48 that I mentioned earlier. He didn't feel that there was much chance of that dividend being reduced. And then the third item there, construction scope or creep during or overruns during the construction would eat into the $978,000 of contingency reserve there. So for mitigation, CoBank mentioned that, they've done their best to estimate the interest rates, but they depend on so many economic variables,
it's really hard to tell, but they feel that their interest rate hikes are conservative and should cover it. The probability of the patronage cash dividend I mentioned being reduced is very low, according to Bentley. And then again, we just need to maintain close management, project management over the construction costs, and you know, work with John Tedry and MC Engineering to make sure we're not building the Mercedes, and really examine any change requests quite carefully before they're approved. So as I mentioned a while ago, if we did ask for USDA reimbursement for the interim loan, that could basically cut the construction contingency reserve in half. But as Lee Bateman just pointed out, it's not really the whole $450K of interest. It'd be something less than that. So the long-range recommendation, we know that construction payment amounts must be covered via our interim loan unless Michael's successful in going back one more time to try to get that waived. And we also must cover the interest payment from our budget reserves through the construction period. This is all information that we plan to work up and make sure Lee Bateman has. We can see the cash inflows and outflows based on everything we know as we progress through construction. And obviously, our budget performance throughout construction is going to dictate the options that we have and that we'll need to decide on. Any other questions on that page?
Yeah, Tom, one very brief question, and that is the co-bank 0.25% semi-annual potential increase. That's not a given. It could be less, or I suppose under some circumstance could actually go down. Would that be correct? Or is this an automatic quarter-to-quarter increase?
No. Bentley just said, you know, based on so many economic variables, you know, that's just a conservative guess. It could go down, but he has some type of data bank that he looks at on a monthly basis that gives him indications of what they're projecting it to be.
Well, I think the Federal Reserve has indicated they're anticipating raising interest rates over the next couple of years, and that will be a strong influence on the LIBOR rate, if not a direct influence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They always say that.
That's another way of saying I think we should anticipate that those rates are going to go up at least what they're suggesting, if not more.
True.
So is it possible, Tom? Is that 0.25% a maximum semi-annual adjustment, or could it be 0.43?
Yeah, it could be 0.43. Bentley just said that he felt that 0.25 semi-annually was conservative, not expected to be greater than that.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Understand. Thank you.
So the next page just kind of gives an idea, looking out for the next 2 or 3 years here, you know, the decision-making process that we're going to have to go through. Lee Bateman had sent me an email, making sure that, as we put together the information on how these dollar values that we're going to have to cover out of our budget reserve over the next couple years, how those compare to any reimbursements, and make sure we put together a you know, a timeline for the next 2 or 3 years on how we view that working, so that he can, from a financial standpoint of our budget, be able to you know, work that into his budget analysis. So this kind of just gives a summary of the estimated costs and eligible reimbursements by year. And again, those numbers, based on my latest red lines with addendum one built in, for 2018, the 289.6 is 356.7. The 66.4 is 67.2. So the total estimated costs for 2018 there are 423.9. The eligible reimbursements are 917 estimated. So the delta there would be 493 instead of 516. In 2019, the 366 becomes 368. The 432 becomes 435. And the delta is 67K instead of 66. So again, this will be fluid. It'll be constantly worked, you know, almost monthly, as we go through the next, you know, through the remaining design and engineering up to construction, and then all the way through construction. You know, these will be numbers that will be constantly worked, and we'll see how everything plays out with our costs, and we'll have to make decisions based on that. Any questions on that page?
No, it's well presented.
So now we're the next page. We get into another area that was discussed at our last long range planning committee meeting. I've had several discussions with Dave and John Pedry over the last month or month and a half regarding the number of residences for that we're looking at through the lateral service line. Confirmed by Dave and John, there's 976 residences that require new service lines be put in. 732 parcels that will not require a new service line. Those are made up of, and you know, based on the new figures that Lee Bateman mentioned earlier, I haven't double checked these to see if they've changed by one or two, but so the 732 parcels that do not require a new service line included the 289 lots, 25 combined lots, and 418 residents. So in looking at the ones that do require new service lines, there's ones in the where the service line is in the back of the house. That's 559 residents. We looked at what the average cost would be, and the average number of feet. Based on that, we came up with 1.258 million as the cost to replace those. There's 417 residents that are in the service lines in the front of the house. Based on the average feet and average cost per foot, we estimated 94K there. So of those 976 that require new service lines, we're looking at about 1.352 million. There were also 400 plus residents that have replaced their service lines and paid for it on their own in the past. And just based on our estimates, we came up with a between, you know, it's hard to say, but between 500 and 900K, we have no record on those lengths or the cost of these replacements, nor if the owners have any records to prove what they've done. Another point is that These replacements will probably occur in 2019 and 2020, with probably just based on John Pedry's upfront estimate, about 40% of those would be in latter part of 2019 and 60% in 2020. My takeaway on the bottom there was, you know, obviously this is out in the future a ways. We have time to review our options and work on a solution. As we work on that solution, we must take into account how this decision needs to be factored with, you know, all the other obligations that we talked about on the preceding pages, you know, with our USDA and interim loan financial responsibilities, and excuse me, the overall impacts that these service lines could have on our long-term cash flow and reserves. We move to the next page. So during our discussion in the long-range planning committee meeting, I just wanted to put out there the initial thoughts that were discussed and a few of the options that we put out there for consideration. So based on that large dollar amount you just saw, it becomes clear that underwriting the relocation of the resident service line from our budget reserves is just not feasible. There's no easy solution. Whatever approach we take is going to upset some portion of our community. And the community as a whole, we feel, is not going to want to be assessed the cost of moving a portion of the shareholder service line. It'll be hard to justify, you know, giving an assessment against the total membership to replace a portion of the service lines. Probably 50% of the population. We also need to consider, you know, whatever option we move forward with, the potential backlash that you might have if we do put out a special assessment or rising cost in fees based on this. So there's three different options that I put together based on the discussions. This first one was just an option thrown out there that if we did have some type of rebate program and limited it to a $500 max or actual cost, then based on that, the total would be limited to $582 instead of the, you know, the few million dollars that we were looking at. However, with all the other potential liens on reserve that we've been talking about, we don't know if this would be feasible until probably late next year.
Agreed.
So,
that's a good point. In fact, unless the board takes umbrage, I think we ought to just defer this matter.
Well, let me ask a question. When you say late next year, you mean late 2019?
Yes.
Well, don't our existing shareholders have some expectation of a program?
A rebate program?
Well, yes. Do our shareholders have...
Yeah, we've already gone public that we're going to cover those costs. You know, Bob brought that up in the town hall.
I did.
4 months ago.
We didn't guarantee him anything.
Well, we do.
We talked about it.
No, but here's my concern. If we don't tell them anything between now until, let's say, September of 2019... according to this number, 40% of them will be in the process of connecting in 2019, and the other 60% are going to be in 2020. And if we don't tell them until September or even July of 2019, oh, by the way, you're going to have to pay some percentage or all of it, I think that's going to be a surprise to them And if we think that's a possibility, shouldn't we alert them to that as a possibility as soon as we can?
In my opinion, I think you're right. I think we need to continue working this, and you know, I think we probably owe it to the shareholders to let them know that, and we'll need to come up with the right way to approach it, but we need to let them know that that we're still working on this, you know, and we haven't come up with a solution yet, but that the cost of those service lines is much greater than we originally anticipated, and that as we work through it and come to any conclusions, we'll make sure to make those known to the shareholders. Something like that.
Well, we talked about it in November. The message delivered was that if the water company is going to compel you to move your water line, then we should try and cover the cost. And it was mentioned that those costs would be covered by our reserves. There's no guarantee, and we didn't talk dollars. We didn't talk a specific amount. And we're operating off of an initial cost of this project at $650,000. Now it's $1.2 million or $1.3 million. Had I known that that was the more specific number, I wouldn't have mentioned this rebate program at all. And I'd still stand on the fact that if there's a rebate program that could be applied, we'll do so. But at this point, we don't know. I can't imagine a homeowner. Well, the homeowner's not going to have any choice. They're going to have to relocate the line. And we're not compelled to pay for anything. What I said was that since we are requiring it, we should try and cover the cost. Now, if we can try and cover some of the costs or all the costs, we're going to do so. But I think at this point, we're not in a position to relegate any of our reserves to any type of rebate program. And I'm talking about January of 2018. And I would imagine in January of 2019, probably close to mid to late 2019, we'll have a better aspect on it. But in the interim, I would suggest we defer it.
The only thing, Bob, I would suggest is that Tom has a further discussion of a loan program and the pros and cons of that, and perhaps we could discuss that, or at least he could present the elements of it, because there are significant differences for all the shareholders if it is a loan program as opposed to some form of a rebate program or funding, shared funding by the company.
Right, and so part of this got into the discussion was, is the water company going to oversee all of this construction, or are we going to rely on the homeowner to go out and get their own contractor? And in talking to, and I was asked by the board to talk to Michael, which I've done, and Dave Hicks, we've discussed this, and of the two options, it appears that the homeowner seeking out the contractor is the better way to go. Now, what we don't know is we don't have any sense at all about what the average cost is going to be. We're speculating. Some of it's speculative on projects that have happened before. I used the number $1,500 originally as an average based upon the numbers I had at the time. And it turns out the numbers that I had at the time weren't as accurate as they should be, or not as accurate as they stand today. Andy first mentioned some time ago that we ought to try and help the homeowner out. And I agree, and I think that when we have a better sense of what things are going to cost, and we have some time to finite that we do, if we want to come up with an interim loan process, we have time to do so. And if we're going to try and cover the cost, as we've alluded to, people are going to have to wait. I don't know what else to tell them. It's we can't do both. the surprise and the fly in the ointment is this interim loan matter and the interest we're going to be paying on it. And as far as I'm concerned, the jury's still out about if this loan's going to cover it. I just don't feel that well about it. And I think before we commit any reserves to any type of a rebate program, we ought to wait a little. And I just offer that. If the board feels differently, I'm certainly open.
Well, I think, unfortunately, a horse left the barn back in November, which we need to get back into the stable somehow. But waiting until November of next year to do that is, I think, way, way too late. I have, given this subject a lot of thought, and I'm kind of now in a mindset of, given the fact that, we think that if we do some sort of a rebate for those backyard people, that then suggests that we need to go back and do something with the people that have already moved their service lines. And then, philosophically, there becomes the question of, well, Andy Rich, only has to move his service, 4 feet. Should I, be charged a number to help somebody I don't even know move their backyard line to the front service? And I'm saying, there's so many different constituencies here that it may just be better to let the chips fall as they may. If you're in the backyard, well, we're sorry, but you're stuck with that number.
Other thoughts?
I can see this financial needs thing is going to be a rat's nest. I would dump that completely and just offer a loan. You get into financial needs and demonstrating that and everything else, I think that's going to be a whole another headache for another committee to come up with a form and to come up with the verification and
standards.
And then standards, and I think that would be a bad way to go. But
well, then you get into confidentiality issues. Do I want the water company to know what my retirement investment funds look like? Hell no. No way on earth.
No, it's going to be a huge problem if it's offered.
I think we do anything, it's a loan of some sort. I think any rebate at this point is just going to really open up Pandora's box, and you're going to have a lot of people like me that are going to grouse and bitch and complain that I don't want to pay an assessment to help two neighbors down the way relocate their water line. Why should I? There's that whole thing. So I think any kind of a rebate at this point, unfortunately, given rethought of my original position, is Jay says it's a rat's nest. And there's no win solution, if we did that. So we're better off taking it on the chin and saying, the best we're going to do is, loan program. Sorry.
I'll just add that type of rebate, if we were to do a rebate, would, we're not subject to Prop 218. We've had these discussions before, but a public water agency would not be allowed to do that.
Sure.
And, just as it's, we're not subject to 218, but we tend to operate very similarly to a public agency, and if that's an area where we might want to use that as part of the justification for not doing a straight, rebate program and using a loan program instead.
I'll be happy to continue to work on it. I was the one that stood up in front of the group, and I'd be happy to stand up in front of them again and tell them that we've had a financial surprise. If there is going to be a rebate program, it's going to put it off for a number of years. I have no issue with that at all. As far as the loan program, I see that as a separate matter. And until we get a better sense of what things are going to cost, we put together a format of a loan program. And how do you pay it down, and how are you going to do that, and so much dollars per month. And I'll work with Michael on the legalities and the staff with the application of it. We don't want to create a monster behind it. We want to keep it simple. How many people will use it? I don't have a sense of that. I truly don't. And I'm not going to do any more guesswork on what things, how much things cost. But I do think that this, and we should let the membership know that this, I keep going back to this interim loan matter, this interest obligation is a little bit of a surprise. I don't know if you're surprised, but I sure am. And whether it's $300,000 or $500,000, it's something we have to contend with. And that lays in on other matters we'd like to pursue. We owe the people to tell them that, and I'll put something together on that. I'll be happy to.
This is Tom. Just another way to look at this. If we are not providing a rebate for whatever the dollar amount ended up being, and we're able, because of not providing that rebate, keep all the shareholders' rates lower, everybody's winning as opposed to just a portion of the population winning.
True.
So that's something we need to factor into our decision-making process.
Agreed.
One more redundant thought. I think we need to go out with this sooner rather than later, Bob.
I'm sorry, yes. No, yeah. When I say about going out with it, I'm talking about I'll have something done for the Butler on Monday.
Okay. So what do you think that's going to be? That we're going to offer a loan program, details to be determined, or...
Yes.
There'd
be a part of that, I want to go back and listen to the discussions on the 11th about the rebate program, because I recall that we were very specific, or I was specific. I didn't quote any numbers at all. And while we talked about it, I tried to remain somewhat ambiguous that we're going to, if it was going to come to be. But I clearly remember talking about that we had to do a lot more research on it. And now
I'm afraid though people heard that we were going to cover it.
Well, then they're going to hear that we can't for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just they can vote me out. My wife.
But I think philosophically, I'm at a point where any kind of a rebate, whether we do it along the way or somewhere in the future, is just opening up a Pandora's box and a rat's nest of too many different issues. So I would be in the mindset to, at this point, say I'm not in favor of any rebate program at all, and if we do anything, it would be in the form of a loan program.
And can I suggest, with a loan program, the company still needs to have, let's suppose we loan out $1 million or whatever it is to those people. We still have to have $1 million in cash in our reserves that we can commit for whatever period the loan is going to take. And since we do not know even a reasonable estimate of what our reserves will be in 2019 or 2020, may I suggest that the letter be, whatever the bubbler article, make it pretty clear, we're dropping back to the starting position. We will be looking at something or whatever, but we need not to go from where we are now to we're going to have a loan program, because we may not be able to have an effective loan program.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. No, I agree. Tom?
Any more discussion?
Go ahead.
Okay, so moving on, the last topic that the Long Range Committee chart package is the reserves planning discussion. So obviously a lot of work needs to be done on our reserves over the next 2 or 3 years, and it'll be constantly evolving. But we do know that there's some givens. We have a USDA required reserve starting next year.
and a debt reserve. So those will be beginning next year, and those are a given. The debt reserve is $44,000 a year for 10 years, and the short-term asset reserve at this point, based on what was put in our application, is a maintain a $40,000 balance. My intent is to continue to keep this on the agenda for all of our long-range planning committee meetings to continue discussing overall reserves and determining whether or not there are any other reserves that that will be potentially required in the future. A bullet there shows that Sharon, Joe, and I signed up to attend a webinar at the end of this month. It's put on by the, what are they called, AWWA? Hello?
Yeah, we are.
Okay. So this seemed very appropriate as far as our asset management reserve account goes. And being able to get more information from on how to put together an asset reserve inventory and all the planning that needs to go with that and how you gather the information and turn it into actionable data. So this webinar is supposed to provide us with techniques and tools that we can use to begin asset inventory. And so anyway, we're planning on attending that. We'll use what we're able to glean out of that. They also offer free follow-up advice that we'll see if we want to request. As part of our discussion, we discussed again that the Blue Lake Springs HOA had previously hired a firm specializing in capital asset reserve planning. I've contacted Tony Abua at the HOA, the GM there. I was suggested that he probably had the information that I needed. He's since got back with me, gave me the name of the group that they used. It's called the Helsing Group, H-E-L-S-I-N-G Group. I think they're out of San Ramon. And he gave me their contact information, their phone number. So I looked at their website, and they've put together over 3,000 planning packages in this area. They've got a lot of experience in it, I will follow up with them. I'll probably get. Dave and Lee involved because I'm sure in order for them to give us an estimate of what it would cost, they're going to need some of the details like we used to put together the reserve estimate that went into the USDA loan. John Pedry and Mark have also indicated that they can provide resources and support to assist us in the development of our asset reserve account. So that's another area that we can continue to discuss with them. So that is the end of my presentation.
Outstanding.
Very good.
Questions or comments?
Yeah, Bob, just so you know, I have an absolute drop dead of no later than 12 noon your time.
Okay. I wouldn't want you doing that on me, but we'll see what we can do. Tom, thank you very much.
Well, you don't have a choice. I have a client meeting that I have to adjourn to.
That was the dropping dead part that I was concerned about.
that too.
I can't tell you how many times that's happened. All right. Tom, thank you.
Bob?
Yes, sir.
Just one other item that, we've talked about several times throughout my chart package. was the MC Engineering Addendum 1 change request that came in. And I just wanted to, I know that John's going to give his status coming up, and I can wait until then. But, you know, based on all the discussions that Sharon and I had with John and Mark, then follow up with the Long Range Planning Committee and answering everybody's questions, you know, the Long Range Planning Committee did come up with a consensus that we recommend, you know, the approval of moving forward with that change order.
Okay. Does everybody have that addendum?
Yeah.
It says draft on it.
Oh, right.
That's the one. Yes. Lee, do you have a copy of that?
No, I'll have to go make one.
No, you can dig it out.
I just had one. I don't know where I buried it.
Yeah, I have to stand by. Does everybody have a copy of what's being discussed? We're about to get discussed. Where's it going?
That's weird. I just have it in here.
They all seem to have disappeared.
If you have access to your email, it was sent.
Here's one.
Well, we just got this morning.
Yeah.
It was sent Thursday at 4:14 p.m. From Lee to the rest of us.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's titled MC Engineering Monthly Report.
Got it. Sort of. Okay, and this is a John Pedry there.
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
You want to speak to this?
Yeah. So first of all, you know, in the course of putting the plans and specs together, one of the key elements of this project was to go into the modeling that was performed originally by Ludolf and Stalmanine, to look at the modeling numbers, try to really analyze the system, because what you're getting is really a new backbone, because the lines that we're installing, majority of the lines and systems that we're putting in, are really the backbone of the whole water system. There's been other projects on the outlying areas, but this is kind of the center, you know, of the project, starting from the plant down Moran, you know, up Patricia, up NOLA, and up Rainey. So it's a pretty extensive project. And so I'm going through the modeling. We've been in discussions with Billy and Dave, and one of the things that we had recommended was the booster station as being a key element.
Right.
Which, as we went through the modeling, we found it to be very, very important, because what that booster station will do will allow us to get a direct connection between tank 4 and tank 6. Which you really didn't have presently, and most of the flow, the backup that would get to tank 4 would come out of the water plant and not out of tank 6. Now, it could kind of indirectly get there from 6. So this booster station provides that opportunity to have a direct connection between tank 6 and tank 4. That just opened up the door for some great opportunities. It also allows us to blend water when necessary, because we have felt during our work with some of the customers and meeting with them out there that some of the areas down in the Cypress Point area and stuff, some of the people were complaining of taste and odor and getting some water that was coming out of the system that just didn't taste like the other water. So having a booster station would allow you to blend some of that CCWD water with the well water, kind of freshen things up a little bit. So it really provides a real asset to the whole system. And doing that, we also said, well, talking with Billy and Dave, Billy's one of the things that wasn't identified in the master plan, it may have been a long-term item. There were two lines across the golf course, two OAC lines that Billy and Dave have had problems with over the years. I'm not sure if Billy's in the meeting there, he could speak to it.
Sure.
But
yep.
they've been problematic, and I Billy would confirm that. So we said, well, geez, is there a way that we can eliminate those two lines? And one way to do that was using this booster station and constructing a new line down Rainey, they call it East Rainey, across the golf course, up Meadows, and then up the back lot to the booster station. That would be the direct connection. Now, in doing that, but also allow us to take a line that currently exists, like I mentioned, from the water plant, down Blue Edge Springs Drive, down Moran, up Rainy to Tank 4. That line is used as a single feed line to get up to the upper zone at Tank 4. We said, well, geez, if we can use a portion of that line, instead of putting a brand new line down Moran, parts of Moran, and all of Blue Lake, we could use that old line and just connect to it with services, disconnect at Rainy and Moran, disconnected at that point, and then run straight through, like I mentioned, the East Rainy Meadow to the booster station. We can then save some significant construction costs because having to put a new line down Blue Lake Springs and a good portion of Moran was going to be very expensive, number one, because it would take traffic control. There was no room in the shoulders. On both those cases, we'd have to go down the roadway, which is expensive. So we looked at that opportunity, and during the revised modeling and runs that we did, we met with Billy, Dave, and Sharon, met at our modeling office, and we went through the different scenarios to show that it would work. We were able to come up with a scheme, I say a scheme, it's probably a bad term, a plan that would allow us to utilize some existing pipeline, at the same time build a new pipeline down the southern end connecting Tank 4 to 6, that would also allow Billy to eliminate the two crossings of the golf course. And I'll be honest with you, when I finally came up with the final numbers, it was amazing how close, there was a little mini net savings. It was a wash in terms of cost. In providing those changes. And the scope that I listed out kind of goes through that specific change I mentioned, plus another change that we found, a scope revision that had to be added, and that was there's a piece of NOLA pipeline that wasn't in the master plan. It didn't show up as a cost in the master plan. It wasn't until the modeling that we were going through that I recognized that there was a piece of pipe in the modeling, showed up in the modeling that didn't show up in the master plan, that connected the upper end of NOLA into Dean Way. And it wasn't there. It's about 850 feet of pipeline that was missing. So we had to redesign that to get that into the system because it's needed to bring flow from one pressure zone to another. And then there was Linda Drive. There was another scope revision. One of the problems we had with Linda when we were putting the original estimate together, we didn't have a big concrete plug that was put in Linda, put in by the County Public Works Department. They went in and redid part of Linda and added, according to Billy and Dave, some big rocks and a lot of backfill and then some concrete over the top. And so we're trying to find, and we think we found a solution of how we get through and around that concrete flood. Part of the analysis included using an existing line that is connected between Moran and it runs down Linda down the shoulder and then connects in the Blue Lake, and it's a line that's used in part to feed the system from CCWD. It's one of the interconnects, emergency, that's tied to CCWD. So we looked at that in terms of maybe can we use that, burst it, and then we're still looking at that now, coming up with some cost to avoid having to go through that big concrete plug that's in the street. We looked at surveying and going around the plug, but there's just not enough right-of-way based on the survey data we came up with. So I think I have a solution. I'm putting that together now, but it shouldn't. The number I have here, I have a cost of about $10,000. Of savings we would get out of the alternative that we're looking at on that. And then another element of this that we looked at during the modeling may not be in this scope change was using Russell. One of the original master plan modeling showed that to meet fire flows in the upper Russell area, which is up fairly high, you would have to construct a 12-inch line, not a 6, not an 8, but a 12-inch line all the way up to Brand, all the way into Russell. From that point, it becomes an 8 and then a 6 from then on. One of the ideas I had, and I talked over with Dave, we talked with CCWD, was to use a CCWD line that's already in Russell. They have a line that's in Russell that runs all the way down the length of Russell from Brand all the way into their subdivision on the other side. And that itch main has more of an adequate pressure. We thought, well, if we could put the fire hydrants on that main, we would avoid having to build a 12-inch main up Linda and 8-inch and ultimately some sixes. So by doing that, we're able to downsize the Linda main from a 12 down to an 8, maybe even a 6. And we're also looking at downsizing some of the Russell line from a 6 down to a 4 at the back end. Because it is a dead end, and that way we would get a little bit more water flow through it as a 4-inch. So there's some alternatives that we come up with. Now, that Russell alternative of using the existing CCWD main would take, and I'm in the process of drafting a formal letter to CCWD to get permission. According to Dave, he's gotten a verbal and been in communications with them on using their 8-inch for fire hydrants. So that takes the pressure off meeting this fire flow demand that creates these larger lines that would get up to Russell. So that's also in the scope change, and I think overall that's going to save money too. So what we've been trying to do as we go through the modeling is find ways of meeting the needs and requests of staff at the same time trying to improve the overall operational efficiency of the system, and I think we've done that. And so that's what you see in the scope revision, and I put in the cost. I sent a new updated little version of it that has the ultimate construction cost savings for each of those scope changes, except for the modeling, obviously, which is just something we had to do. But,
John, this is,
overall, yeah, go ahead.
John, this is Andy. I hate to interrupt, but I do have a question back on the Russell CCWD 12-inch line. And
yes.
The question probably goes to Michael in that, do we have a legal right to access that? Or stating it another way, does this in some way impact the current contract and require an addendum?
Do we have to access what?
Our wholesale water.
Well, that CCWD 12-inch line running up Russell.
That's a good question. So that contract actually does specify the point of connection, the meter through which we take our CCWD water. So if we're going to change the point at which we take that water, then that doesn't mean we can't do it. It just means we need to work with CCWD in revising the contract and making their main concern, I think, is going to be making sure they can still meter it properly, making sure they can still account for how much we're taking.
At a minimum, I think a letter or memo of understanding is going to have to be developed, which gives us permission to add fire hydrants to that line, because that's beyond the contemplated scope of what the original deal was had contemplated.
Yeah, Andy, it's John Pedry. I was in the process of drafting a letter for Dave. I know he's not in. And I've gone over some bullet points with him to put into a draft letter that I would send to you in terms of what the conditions would be for using those hydrants. And again, it would only be in the case of a fire flow scenario. They currently have hydrants on their 16-inch main. When you drive up Moran now, you'll see hydrants along Moran. Those are CCWD hydrants. They still feed your system or feed the fire needs of the system. And all we're doing is trying to work with Ebbets Pass Fire, CCWD at the district to try to get those hydrants in off their 8-inch. Now, it definitely saves. There'll be more efficiency, more pressure off their 8-inch, probably better fire flows off their 8-inch, and us putting a 6-inch down than Russell is planned. So there are some definite benefits, but I'm in the process of putting that draft letter together, and I plan to get it today when he comes back. And then we need to definitely work with Mike on this. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I guess that would be my concluding point is, we need the lawyers to look at this to make sure that the belt and suspenders is on it.
John?
Yes?
Is any of the work you're talking about outside of the scope of the loan?
No, it all falls within the loan scope. We're using reserves and we have some additional services items within design that were really placeholders that we can utilize to help offset any costs that come out. It still falls within the overall design budget, and in terms of the
total amount that we have in the design budget with contingencies and incidental costs. So it won't affect the loan. Long term, from a construction standpoint, I'm showing no net effect currently based on some construction estimates. So, you know, I think the answer to your question is probably no. I don't see any significant, if anything, it'd be minor, but it shouldn't be having any effect on the final number.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tom?
Yeah?
Did you have any, you'd sent me an email on this one. It doesn't require any outside funding on our part, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Any questions at all of MC Engineering?
I got a comment. Yeah, John, when you did the subsequent analysis showing the cost impact on the recommendations, that was really helpful to show that in reality you had a cost benefit, or at least equivalent. So it's very easy to see the advantage of your idea. And so that, not only that, but then your comment just now, you're talking about even the possible impact on the construction. In this case, there was should be none. That helps make the comments with regard to why these changes and what's the effect. Any comment on that?
No, go ahead.
No, I just want to hear the feedback. It was really helpful to help make a recommendation after you mentioned the fact that this was really a cost saving or certainly a no impact on cost.
Yeah, let me say one thing too. I really have to say this. I know Billy's in there, and the proactive nature and actions of both Billy and Dave in terms of trying to work with us on this thing, it's kind of a, I don't say it's not a moving target. It's more of a moving entity. It's just kind of growing. It's not growing, but we're learning more and more about how your system works and getting feedback from them on what we need to do and how we need to do it. It's been just a excellent. I just haven't had that with other agencies and this kind of feedback. So it's helped us really get a handle on this system. And it makes it fairly easy to see what we're doing to make sure that what we're doing is going to give you a system that operationally will last a long time and be very efficient. So yeah, you got to see there's been a lot of help getting this thing together.
Okay, and I appreciate the work you've done on the cost matter. As you probably learned from this morning, there's an increased sensitivity about the future cost of everything. And
yeah,
about the what I'll call the floor scrapings are going to be left over at the end of this project, and it covers the our new friend, the interim loan. But thank you for. Hopefully there won't be any more surprises.
No, Bob, let me just say one other note. Thank goodness this surprise kind of ended
inevitably.
It turned out fine. Let me just say that we're going through the cost estimate. I'm not ready to formally put a fine-tuned cost estimate on the table. We're still playing with some of the line work, especially some of the stuff on Rainey and Meadow, and we're going through services, how many doubles, how many singles. As you know, we're interacting currently with both staff and residents in terms of where we put that meter. There's some issues where the property line is, where it isn't. I know Mark's more worried about liability there than me because, my position is if we're in the right-of-way and there's a little plus or minus a couple of feet we have to get to a property, that's the best you're going to get. I've had that in some of my situations in Lincoln. We're going to try to locate those meters at the best location. But in that, for example, we had budgeted, I'll give you some ideas where we may see some cost savings. We had budgeted over 200 plus meters that were going to be single services, the single line serving a lot. And as a result of some of the doubling up and some of the layouts we put together, we got it down to about 80 singles. So there could be a savings of about 150 to 200 meter lines at $2,000 a piece.
So when you add up that, then all of a sudden there's the savings there. And just to let you know, overall with the project, we're also trying to add up all the line work, the main line distances from point A to point B now that we have everything pretty much exactly where we want it. And I think we're going to see an overall savings in the total footage that we use within the PERS that we now have now in terms of total line distance. Now, I'm not going to say how much that is. I'm not ready to, but there may be a savings there. So what we're trying to do is come up with some numbers now that we can roll into kind of a semi-final estimate that would give you a better handle. And so by the next meeting next month, you guys should have an estimate. You should have some better numbers, and we'll have a better understanding of where we are, where we need to go from this point, from an overall project cost. So we're making good progress. I have a crew coming out next week to verify some of the final meter locates. I gave them 3 days to do it. They got to go out and verify some discrepancies that I found and things that they've gotten from Dave and Billy and Thomas they've gotten from residents. And they're going to get all those lined out so we can put them on the map. So I think we're really getting there. I feel pretty comfortable with what we have so far. So, yeah.
So do we.
Yes.
All right, John. Thank you very much. Any questions?
You bet.
Any questions of MC Engineering? Comments? Item next, unfinished business, has to do with the bank we are sitting in. I'm sure you've recognized that there's no standing line outside the door of banks wanting to come in and rent the bank, so to speak. We're at a position now where we have some options. We can just leave the listing the way it is. We can retract it. We can take it off the market. We can try. It does not appear that there are businesses other than savings and banking institutions that are interested. In fact, there are a lot of empty buildings in the town. If we're going to take it off the market, there's one expansion we'd like to do here to make this more of a meeting facility. So the issue of what happens next is on the table. For your comments, thoughts, reactions.
Someone mentioned to me about Central Bank. They moved from Angels Camp to San Andreas. Maybe they might be interested in coming up here.
Umpqua. Huh? Umpqua Bank moved.
Oh, okay.
It was Umpqua from Angels to
yes.
San Andreas.
Yes.
They closed their Angels branch.
Yes.
I don't know if they'd be interested in coming up here, but I will check on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
You were talking about possibly making a modification for whatever. I'm wondering, I'm not sure where you were going with it, but what if you made a modification where you had some meeting rooms or something like that, which could be rented out on a case-by-case basis, and make, you know, another variable high-usage kind of thing where the Lions Club or somebody wants to have a meeting or whatever, and things can be moved around to accommodate almost any kind of meeting.
Well, there are two thoughts. One is that do we compromise what we're trying to accomplish by rental here if we close this entire section off and dedicate it to something else? That's one. The other is we create a meeting facility and make it available. The third option, we don't do anything.
I just see some variability is that if, rather than walling off something permanent to make this open to durable kinds of things that people that say at night somebody wants to come in and have a meeting where we're not even, there's nobody here doing that.
Well, we can take a look at if there's a market there.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking for
another. I can't imagine that there would be much of a market for something like that. You know, my sense is we've got enough swirling around financially that if we can't find a bank to do it, we just run with it as is and not spend any more money until we know where our dollars and cents are going and coming from. Yeah, I'm like you, Bob. I'm, you know, this $500,000 interest curveball is something that has me concerned in the overall scope of the project and whether or not our beer pocketbook can afford our vision for what John and his team are designing for us. And I'm not suggesting the design is wrong, but we've had several years pass by between the time the original estimate was done to fulfill the need to get a loan and when construction actually starts. So, if I'm Lee Bateman, I'm probably catatonic or certainly hyperventilating around, how do we manage the budget for the next 3 or 4 years until we know where all of the dollars and cents are. So, back to that excess space, I think we leave it alone for now and revisit it 18, 24 months from now.
One of the, and I agree with that, one of the other little pieces to consider is that there's a property tax obligation on this facility that we are paying, and we're taking issue with the County of Calaveras because we're a not-for-profit organization, and generally not-for-profit organizations don't pay property tax. County assessor said, "You go ahead and pay the tax, and you can make your case, and we'll get to you in a year or two or three." I think until that's resolved, we ought to let sleeping dogs lie. Meanwhile, the staff has asked about closing this room off. We'll get some hard figures and present that to the board on exactly what it would cost, and address it as when the matter comes forward. But in the meanwhile, we'll keep this on the market. We're agreed with that?
Yeah, that's fine.
And, okay. Anything else on the bank that isn't new business? Any correspondence?
Just the one that was listed in your packet about the membership lots.
About the which and where?
The membership lots.
The person who wants us to
promise. 33 of 41. Second escrow has been completed on the unbuilt lots, the membership lots.
Oh,
this
okay.
New owner would like to see something in writing from us stating that they will not have to participate ever in any improvements in the system.
We don't have that category of share.
No, we...
right.
Yeah, the never say never.
Right. Our response to him was, or at least my response to staff was, we don't do that. We've never done that, and if we are going to do that, it would have to be something that the board takes action on, that we're creating a category of shareholder that will never be included in an assessment, till the end of time. And I don't think this, I certainly wouldn't recommend that this board tie future board's hands in that way.
Okay, everyone understands what the issue is. They have to do these little parking lot strips, these little tiny pieces that were sold off by the homeowner association, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're non-built.
Yeah, Bob, I thought we'd already discussed and resolved it.
Well, we had, and the one owner wants a letter from us saying that we'll never do anything as far as charging them with anything further.
The resolution didn't cover this. The resolution only covered the amount that we would charge them, $25 a year, and then the... there was one other thing, but not this specifically, that they would not be involved in any assessment.
I think the buyer was hoping it would be easy just to get Dave to write a letter saying you're never going to be charged anything more than the $25 per year or something along those lines. And it's not that easy, and it's also not within Dave's authority to make that kind of commitment on the board's behalf. Mm-hmm. So that's something that would require board action, and I have never seen any interest to do that kind of thing.
So there's no further action.
I need to write a letter.
Well, I'll answer his letter.
Yeah. And I think the response is just simply we don't make those kinds of commitments.
Mm-hmm. I'll take care of that. Okay.
Not that omnificent.
If it's passed accounting.
Who wants to speak to this? There are three engagement letters in the packet. The first one has to do with the 2017 annual review, that annual review that she always does for us, with the exception that she won't be putting together all the notes and all the verbal things. So she'll be working more with figures this year. We have approved for her to go ahead and do this. She just wanted to line out in this engagement letter what she will be doing and how she will handle it, just so everybody here knows. The second letter talks about what she can do for us in 2018. I went and spoke with Lauren from Atherton. He's the new auditor that we will be engaging with for the audit for this year end and future. He and I went down and met with Sandy, and in step with the USDA requirements, he feels that it would be a good idea to go ahead and have Sandy look at our financials on a quarterly basis in 2018 to keep us in step, to make it easier for the auditors to come in and make it easier to close the books at the end of 2018. The last letter deals with, because I noticed that in her first letter for 2017, she didn't include the fact that they would be filing taxes for us, which they always have in the past. I asked her to write an engagement letter saying, yes, they would continue to figure the taxes, fill out the form, and then give it to us for payment.
Okay.
So those three letters, if the board wishes, need signatures on the bottom.
Okay. No action of the board is necessary for this. Correct.
There will be additional fees, and we did set up fees for her to handle the 2017 review of $4,000. There may be additional fees coming into effect depending on how long it takes her to figure out the quarterly in 2018. So it's a possible budget hit. I don't think it'll be much, but right, it would be more than we planned.
We'll see when the billing comes. Any questions on the accounting matter? Hearing none.
So you're going to sign this before you leave today then, Bob?
Yeah, I will.
Okay. Thank you.
LRPC vacancy matter has been discussed. That's item D. Any action items?
New action items. Attorney Minkler will be looking into foreclosures. Policy changes for aged accounts, that would be Lee Bateman, we'll be looking into that. We will be posting the packet on the website. They'll find out do's and don'ts of posting those packets information. Bob and Michael will be looking into a loan program, and that's what I have today.
One potential source to ask about any concerns about posting the financials, it would be, you know, CCWB does it every month.
I thought I'd
too.
Look at there, yeah.
And Jeff Myers, our finance director, is very helpful, very nice guy.
Excellent.
I'm sure to be willing to talk to you about it.
Okay.
All right, folks, I have to sign off. My apologies, but I've got a client meeting here that I need to get into.
Hey, Andy, I got four more minutes yet.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I know, don't say it. Happy New Year. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Happy New Year, everybody.
You can get a chance to Bye. Tell you what you can do with your 4 minutes.
Well, yeah, let's drop that one right away. Are there any matters to come before the executive session?
You wanted to speak to something.
No, it's been covered. I already had it, no.
I don't think we have
then
anything.
Then that's it. That'll be very good.
No, okay. Mr. Maker,
I don't think we have anything for executive
All right.
session.
Anyone have anyone on the board have a matter to come before the executive session? Hearing none. Motion to adjourn.
Woo-hoo. I so move.
Thank you. Lunch is provided, I understand.
Lunch is provided. Everybody.
For those who are across to eat lunch. I could have a nice suggestion.
Okay, Tom's going to sign off.
Tom,
thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry it's 75
Great job.
Degrees warm in Arizona.
Great.
John, thank you.